Welcome back to the Resilient Vet Podcast. And this is part two of a two-part series. And specifically, if you are a woman in veterinary medicine, you're going to want to listen to this episode. This is part two of a discussion on creatine and using it as a supplement to improve your energy, improve your overall work tolerance, and your overall health. In the first part of this two-part podcast, if you haven't heard it already, go back and listen to it. But we talked about what creatine is. We talked about how it works. We talked about ATP, adenosine triphosphate. We just did a little bit of science. Really talked about the physical benefits, the cognitive benefits of supplementing with creatine. Today, we're going to answer, should veterinary professionals actually take creatine? And if so, how much? We're going to talk about specific effects on and benefits for women specifically. Talk about menopause a little bit, bone health, dosing, and then risks. Really kind of think about who this supplement may be best for. Thank you for joining us. My name is Aaron Shaw. I am an occupational therapist, certified hand therapist, and a certified strength and conditioning specialist. I'm a nerd of science and how the body works and body functions. And I'm married to a veterinarian and been spending the last couple of years just focus exclusively on vet medicine and helping vet professionals and teams thrive in this very challenging, physically and emotionally challenging career. And that is why I started Project Vetspan, where I coach and consult with people to help them be the best that they can possibly be for themselves, their teams, and their patients and clients. In this podcast, the Resilient Vet Podcast is an opportunity for us to share our expertise, and I have another expert that joins me, Dr. Jennifer Edwards. Thank you for being here.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Jennifer Edwards, and I have been a veterinarian for many years, and I am now a leadership coach and a speaker. And what I do is I help veterinary leaders with what I call the inner side of leadership. Because I've been there, right? 13 years as a practice owner, and I've been through it all, the difficulty in the communication, the overwhelm, the stress, the feeling alone, the really not understanding why no matter how hard I tried, sometimes people didn't perceive me or respond to me the way I was looking. And that's what I help with, right? So how do we create leadership to be an empowered experience so that people feel good, they get the results that they want? And I also work with teams. Right? I'm a doctor. So let's do some diagnosis assessment and develop a treatment plan so that we can create the exact ideal team that you have been trying so hard to create that just almost seems to be elusive. So reach out. I do private coaching. I do speaking workshops, and I would love to have a conversation about this for you. So Aaron, I am so excited for this part of the creatine conversation today. Because as a woman who has been in this profession a long time, this puts me into also a certain category where this really is relevant as it is for so many people. I mean, when we think about, especially, you know, in recent decades, the percentage of women that are coming out of vet schools, it's high, right? And we talk about menopause, perimenopause. The perimenopausal period can actually start in the late 30s. So there's actually not a whole lot of time that people get out of vet school and then have until this starts to apply to them. So there's a lot of people out there. And you mentioned in part one that there was a lot of interesting research specifically about creatine and women. And I'm really just curious to hear more about that.
Yeah, well, this is probably going to come as no surprise to anybody, but the vast majority of research on creatine, like so many things, is on men. And it's a disservice, but I think that as you mentioned, like that is changing and there's more women-specific research happening, I think generally across medicine. But what I'm excited to see is specifically with this supplement that I'm talking about, creatine, there has been more research specifically for women and is long overdue to say the least. But most of the research, and certainly the initial research was on young male athletes and bodybuilders. And I think that has been sadly stamped as some sort of like crazy bulking protein muscle bound sort of supplement. And it's not. And so this is an opportunity for us to kind of, again, have this discussion and kind of frame this valuable supplement, which you can, again, listen to part one, kind of get into some of the science behind it, but recognize that there is absolutely benefits for all of us, and definitely specifically women. I mean, women experience really unique physiological changes across a lifespan. Obviously, we're talking about perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause. And specifically, as these changes happen, you know, we're really talking about, and again, I'm going to put on my, acknowledge I'm a guy, first of all, but I'm also a strength and conditioning specialist and a science nerd, but to recognize that, you know, as we, as all of us age, we tend to lose muscle mass. We tend to lose muscle strength. We tend to lose bone density. Like, these things happen, again, sort of we reach our peak far too early, frankly. So this is normally in our early 30s, but the impact on women is greater. These risks of losses are greater around the perimenopausal timeframe. So thinking about things that we can do to minimize these losses is hugely important. And even that's sort of like a hard stop. Even more so if you are in a physically demanding, physically and emotionally demanding career like veterinary medicine, exploring creatine, exploring this little supplement that we're talking about is just an opportunity to make the best of these physiological changes that we may really hate, but we're all kind of bound by them at the same time. So this isn't really about, you know, necessarily, you know, simply living longer. It's really about preserving your physical capacity for as many years as possible. And I think that we all know what it's like to be sick and when you don't have a certain amount of physical capacity, and how, you know, when you're like that, the only thing that matters is being healthy again. This is what we're talking about. We really want to talk about, for vet professionals, knowing that you need strength, stamina, mobility, balance, durability throughout your entire career. And so that's where creatine is worth talking about.
Okay. So really, it's a supplement that would benefit anyone. It doesn't matter biological, gender, age, none of that really matters. However, when we think about women specifically and women who are middle age or older, what do you see as the biggest benefit of creatine to this particular population of people?
I think hands down, it is muscle preservation. And I think that this, it's physiologically, it's well documented that, again, in our 30s, we can lose, start losing 3 to 8% of our muscle mass per decade, and even more strength per decade. So again, we're talking like, I mean, 30s is pretty young, and that can be scary to think about if we start thinking like you want to have an active life for decades to come, and even an active career for decades to come, and also acknowledge that you're in a career that is physically demanding. And so there's this mismatch between the physical demands are at best staying the same. Some would argue that dogs may be getting heavier than they used to, but yet our physical capacity is actually decreasing. So preserving muscle is paramount. I mean, muscle loss accelerates as we age, strength declines, our physical reserve decreases. And so people get are really kind of like functioning like almost at their you know, their highest level just on a day-to-day basis. And really, creatine is something that can help you get a, you know, more return on the investment of strength training, of exercises that you're doing specifically to preserve the muscle that we tend to be losing as we age. It can improve the, you know, the quality of training that you're doing, your adaptations, kind of like the results of your investment. And another key point I think that is sometimes overlooked is your ability to recover. So I think that with veterinary medicine, you get a tough day on Monday, bending, squatting, kneeling, contorting, and everything. Well, Tuesday, you got to do it again. Wednesday, you got to do it again. Thursday, you got to do it again. I mean, you have to have something to at least think about, how can you recover from that so you can show up midweek and end of week and not feel like you've been, you know, run over by a freight train. So creatine is important. Creatine can fit in there. But I will have to say that strength training is not optional. You absolutely have to do resistance training, because really the strongest predictor of your future independence is your physical capacity. And that doesn't happen by luck or if you just leave it to time. It's, you know, farther time is not very favorable and we're all in this kind of downward slope if left without attending to it. So I think this is where strength training and creatine is like magical.
Yeah. And I do see like the underlying thread or the underlying theme is recovery, right? And of course, that's why we're here, because what is resilience all about? Resilience means that you can bounce back and keep going, right? And so if we can't end a day doing whatever it is that we're doing in vet med, be it sitting all day, standing, leaning, lifting, squatting, doing surgery, dentistry, dealing with horses, I don't care what it is. Like you said, it's demanding. And recovery over and over and over again is what builds resilience. And so if creatine can assist in that, then that's all part of the resilience playbook. Absolutely. So you mentioned bone health, and especially for women who are, I'd say, just 40 and older as just a general category, this starts to become a really big focus. So talk to me more about how creatine, you know, we hear about how hormone replacement plays a role in bone density, which is, you know, there's so much more research coming out about that. And but how does creatine actually play a role here?
Yeah, so I would think that, you know, hormone replacement is, I think, along the lines, if you think of hormone replacement and creatine and strength training, like these are all part of like a bigger recipe, if you will. This is where it's tough explaining science sometimes, because like, what's the magic pill that's going to solve all things? It's like, there is no such thing. But if we can, again, through the benefit, hopefully, of like piquing some curiosity with these episodes on creatine, kind of like think of like, you know, are there more things I can be putting in my recipe for my health if I'm perimenopausal or menopausal and I am at an increased risk for, you know, osteoporosis, my body is changing, and I want to make sure that I can function at as a high level as possible for as long as possible. And both for, I mean, to be clear, like this is a veterinary specific podcast, veterinary medicine, you're veterinary athletes, you do a bunch of physical things. But in addition, it'd be cool to have some energy and capacity when you get home to your family too, and maybe on your time off, and to not feel like you're just absolutely obliterated after a work day or after a work week. And then your only goal is to like, you know, survive on the couch until you do it again. I mean, the idea here is that with creatine, as we broke down in the episode or part one of this, is it's there for energy. You know, it is an energy source. And so from a, you know, bone health, specifically for women, you know, we're talking about the risk of hip fractures and hospitalizations and deconditioning and all these other things. If you can have creatine as part of a routine and include strength training consistently, you've kind of got this nice, again, this recipe where you're providing your body to, you know, some an energy source, you know, trying to keeping your battery kind of topped off, just so you have the opportunity to do some strength training, give your body a stimulus that's going to take that tendency, that natural physiological, you know, I'd say nosedive, but physiological changes that are happening, and say, wait a minute, if I can kind of supplement with something that'll kind of like give me some energy stores, and then I can utilize those energy stores for some thoughtful resistance training. Yeah. I mean, now you can actually, instead of thinking about losing or, you know, even slowing the loss, like, you know, like let's try to like to lose slower, you can actually gain strength. You know, you can gain muscle mass, you can gain physical capacity if you have some sort of recipe put in. And again, this isn't a podcast on, you know, hormone replacement, but I mean, I think it's all part of the puzzle, right? So if we have, you know, have your physician, you know, deal with the hormone side of things, but then think, what else can I be doing? Can you consider supplementing with creatine, doing some resistance training? You have an opportunity, I would say, for women, like a need to like really do some deep assessment to think if creatine is a good fit for you for, I mean, bone health, muscle health overall.
Yeah. It's really interesting because, like you mentioned earlier, I don't I don't really see or hear creatine being talked about, right? As part of the, you know, if you want to call it the menopause recipe, right? We obviously, strength conditioning is so, so important. I mean, now in this time of life, for those of you out there who are in this peri or menopausal time, but, you know, it's always important, but now more than ever for that bone density. And that's interesting too, because I also think a lot of people think about strength training as muscles, and not a lot of, and a lot of people know this, but some people don't realize that it actually impacts bone density as well. So I just wanted to mention that. Sure. So if somebody wanted to take creatine, what should they do? We can walk into the supplement store, so to speak, and probably go cross-eyed when we get to the creatine shelf. So talk to us about that.
Yes. So first of all, take your time when doing what, you know, if you're staring at a shelf of creatine, it can be, you know, and again, I get creatine. I'm not going to kind of name drop brands here, because brands can kind of come and go or whatnot, but, you know, give yourself permission to do a little bit of research before, see if there's, you know, some creatine companies that maybe you're already familiar with, that, you know, a supplement company that also does, you know, has a creatine product. You're going to be looking for creatine monohydrate, first of all. Why? Well, because it's the most researched, it's been shown to be most effective, and it is least expensive. And it's probably going to be, unless you really do some deep dive, it's probably going to be the one and only that you'll see available to you. Now let's talk about dosing. How much creatine should I take? So the recommended dose is 3 to 5 grams a day. And it's the same for men and women, 3 to 5 grams a day. I can tell you that mine has a little tiny, you know, comes in a little tub, and has a little tiny scooper, and the scooper is 5 grams. And I've put it in smoothies. My wife puts it in her coffee in the morning. There's no taste to it, so you can kind of mix it with different things to consume it. You can take it any time a day. And I think you mentioned this before, Jennifer, like, this is, even though it's an energy source, it is not caffeine, you know, or in its pure form, it's not caffeine. I'm sure somebody's probably mixed it with caffeine to sell it in a different way, but it is not like you take it and you feel suddenly this rush of second cup of coffee, you're going to go take on life. So you can take it anytime, but really what's the most important thing is you take it consistently. So this is, we are talking about kind of recharging our batteries and keeping our batteries kind of topped off. And so the idea here is consistency, to make sure you always have that fuel source ready to go. When you first start taking it, there is research that shows that for some people you can do a loading phase. So if you're not taking it at all right now and you think, oh, okay, I'm really going to do this, I've done my research, I think I'm going to do it, I want to hurry up and, you know, get the most benefit from it. There is some research that shows you could take up to 20 grams a day, ideally broken up into 3 or 4 doses throughout the day for about a week. And again, what this would be doing is topping off your stores, kind of doing it quicker. I frankly don't think that that's necessary for most people, unless you're really kind of exploring true athletic performance. And again, the coaching clients that I work with, I have a half dozen who fit the menopause range, phase of life. And so when we first start talking about this, a discussion is not like, let's get a massive dose in you this week and get you going. It's more a matter of, let's be a little patient. These things take time. And I'd be curious kind of what your experience with this was. Jennifer, you mentioned you take it, but, you know, typically it's more subtle, and hopefully it's part of maybe even a phase where you may be reflecting on your life overall, being like, okay, take the supplement. Let me kind of be, you know, we all go through these phases of like, let me check out what my routine actually is. Like, how well am I sleeping? I'm not feeling great. Maybe I want to try something new. But I think the punchline here for dosing would be 3 to 5 grams a day. And every single day, and when done well, it's something that you would hardly ever notice. Again, my wife puts it in her coffee. You can put it in a smoothie. You can mix it with water. It doesn't matter as long as you get it into your system. So that's the dosing.
Okay. Well, I can share for me that I did not do a loading dose when I started taking it. I had done some reading at that time, and just like what you said, everything pointed to probably not really necessary. So I didn't do that. Interestingly, what I have found is the easiest is I take a short glass, like a small glass in my kitchen, and I put, I don't know, maybe an inch and a half of water. I take the scoop, because a man comes a little scoop too, and I plop the scoop of powder in there, and then I mix it, and then I chug it. And it's looks cloudy, but it does not taste chalky at all. In fact, it just tastes like water. It doesn't feel gritty in your teeth. And then there's always a little left in the cup. I put a little water, swirl it around, and then just drink that water. And so it's very quick. I find it if I put it into something tall, like a tall glass of water or a big thing, unless I'm going to drink it down. A smoothie would hold it well, but creatine is not very soluble. So it reaches its saturation point very quickly. And so it settles to the bottom of the glass, which is why I find it's nice to just, I just stir it very briskly and I chug it down. So that's how I take it. And I have another little question. And then I want to get into risks. If the dose is 3 to 5 grams, I mean, that's not quite, but almost double in that range. How does somebody know to do 3 or 4 or 5?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that I would look at, and this is where it's sort of the, you know, the disclaimer with all these is that, you know, I'm not your coach or your doctor. So, you know, if you have something to be worried about, then, you know, consult with your personal medical professional. But I think that if we could imagine that 5 grams is the ceiling for continued use, at least as of right now. I mean, there's actually some research out there that points to even higher doses, but as of, from what I've read, currently 5 would be the ceiling for continued ongoing dosing. If you started maybe more conservatively and said, I want to kind of just start with 3, I would think that you should feel something, and you indicated like you had a sense of some sensations that were different after you were on it for a little while. Like, you know, within 4 to 6 weeks, if you felt like nothing was really changing at all, then I would kind of bump up to more like that 5 gram higher dose. And if at that point, like if you also, if, you know, if you're at that higher dose and you still feel like nothing's going on. And again, this is really, it's subtle. So this is like, it's a tough sell. Not that I'm selling creatine, but it's just a tough sell, because it's not like, you know, take it for a week and feel amazing. It's like, oh my gosh, I can, you know, lift more weight. My biceps are big. It's like these things, that's not how this works. But I would hesitate to do a higher dose than, you know, probably what's on the whatever container you get, which I bet is going to be 5 grams.
Okay. What's interesting for me is that as far as the mental clarity, I started feeling that right away. It didn't take weeks. So, okay. So we've spent a lot of time, and you know, now this is the second episode that we're talking about creatine and all of its benefits and why it's so great, but nothing is perfect. So tell me, Aaron, what are some of the downsides to taking creatine?
Yeah. Well, creatine is like any other supplement. There's, you know, the list of things to kind of be mindful of, and this is really, individual. So some people can, you know, consume anything and it never bothers them, and other people walk by a supplement and they feel dizzy and, you know, they'll have some sort of reaction to it. But the general side effects, one would be GI upset. So I'd be mindful of that. There is actually some, or can be some, mild water retention. And so for some people, you can have temporary weight gain. So what we're talking about here with weight gain is typically a pound or two. And what I'm glad this is, you know, shared and documented, but I think sadly for some people, that's a deal breaker. It's like, I can't imagine, like so many of the people that I talk to, all they think about is like losing weight. And so the concept of doing anything, like, I mean, I may gain a pound or two, forget it. But we're not talking about gaining fat. We're talking about water, you know, like literally like hydrating your muscles in a sense. But I would say that on the scheme of things, if you have more energy, you're getting more results from whatever work you are doing, meaning like your muscles can actually perform better. That's the name of the game. I mean, your life is not going to be, you know, impacted because you have one more pound of fluid in your body, but it will be profoundly impacted if you have one more pound of muscle on your body. Not the least of which I say is that, you know, more muscle requires more calories. And so if you have another pound of muscle on your body, I mean, hate to say it, but probably nobody's going to notice because it's a pound isn't actually all that much. You may notice it when you step on the scale, but you have one more pound of tissue that requires energy. Energy is calories, and those muscles, that little extra pound of muscle, is going to be consuming calories while you watch Netflix at night. So there are perks to that. But for full transparency, you know, some people can have a pound or two of temporary weight gain, but I think that the most important thing is just to kind of keep an eye on GI upset. You know, it's something that if it's obviously if you take it and you feel like nauseous or something like that, then I would, you know, cut back on that or, you know, stop it completely. Now, there are some specific conditions, and I have a client that this pertains to specifically, kidney disease. So you're definitely going to want to consult with your physician before taking creatine if you do have some sort of kidney disease or really any sort of significant medical conditions or concerns. I mean, when in doubt, consult. The particular client that I work with was taking creatine for a while, knew there was like a mild kidney issue. We stopped it for a while. He had tested, then went back on it. So he has a nephrologist, so sees on the regular. So, you know, had the stats just to kind of verify, like before we go, you know, cause any problems. So it didn't cause any problems, but that would be something just to kind of be mindful of.
Yeah. And there's something you said too that I just wanted to just bring to light because we kind of flew past it and it's slightly different, off topic, but I just wanted to restate it how stepping on the scale is not always the most accurate representation of what's good or bad. In fact, I've stopped weighing myself like completely. Because, you know, I work out and so I'm like, that's just going to make my weight go up, right? Like, and so when we get fixated on these numbers and especially, you know, some of us, depending on who you are and how you were raised, you know, that number on the scale was such an important thing, but it is true. And we all know this, that when you build muscle, muscle weighs more, you gain weight, but that extra weight is actually burning fat. So it's this contradiction of terms. But when all we do is focus on getting the number down on the scale, it's not always leading us towards higher levels of health.
No,
you and know, sometimes it's actually the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're, there's a lot of people that if they stepped on the scale today and they stepped on the scale again 4 weeks from now and they had the number was bigger, it could absolutely be because they are that much healthier.
Right.
You know, and even without losing fat. So I think there are people who are like, oh, you know, I'm supposed to lose 10 pounds or whatever. Well, you know, I could work with you and you can gain 3 pounds of muscle and you're just going to step on the scale and you'd be like, oh. But in reality, you know, if you did like a DEXA scan, like a true like body scan of like, you know, body composition and stuff, there's no reason in the world why you can't be healthier, even though the scale has a bigger number on it. So yeah. So to your point, thank you for bringing that up. I mean, that's a whole soapbox for another day. It drives me nuts.
We don't get into that right now.
But
all right. So you've made a pretty good case. Not that you were trying to convince anybody of anything. You're just here providing information. But still, I mean, listening to everything, it is pretty compelling that this would be a potentially beneficial thing to bring into your life. You know, the situation's, you know, dependent. But if somebody was still on the fence about this, what are just some quick final thoughts that you could offer to help someone who still might not be so sure?
Yes. Well, I respect anybody who's on the fence because that means you're probably giving some thought. And certainly if you listen to both of these episodes, you're curious enough to think about it. So the punchline is, you know, creatine is not magic. It's not a shortcut. And it's absolutely, to be crystal clear, it's not a replacement for exercise, sleep, nutrition, stress management, those four components that I just mentioned, like those have to be a priority. You have to have some sort of structure and a plan and something where you can kind of keep focus on that. But assuming that you're working on dialing in sleep, exercise, nutrition, and stress, creatine could be arguably like one little scoop, could be one of the simplest and thankfully most researched and affordable tools to support your physical and cognitive performance. So in a sense, it's not going to be alone. It doesn't do much of anything per se. But as part of like this bigger recipe, like I mentioned earlier, like if you're doing all the other pieces and you want to get kind of amplify the benefits of those, that 5 milligram scoop that is tasteless and just needs to be kind of built into a habit could have dramatically measurable benefits. And it has for my, I mean, it sounds like it has for you. It has for me. It has for my coaching clients. So if you are strength training, and you should be, and if you're an active veterinary professional, you probably are because you're listening to this episode. If you're a vegetarian or a vegan, if you're approaching menopause, if you're focused on healthy aging, and if you really want to be as healthy and vibrant as possible for as long as possible, creatine is worth looking at. And if you're looking for any sort of visualized guidance, and I realize we don't do that on this podcast because we speak to the millions of masses, the people that listen. but for anybody who wants more specific or custom details, you can of course reach out to me. Happy to kind of talk through your specific case. You can find me at projectvetspan.com or on LinkedIn, or shoot me an email at info@projectvetspan.com.
Okay. Well, thank you, Aaron. And while I will not advise you about creatine, I definitely can advise you about empowered leadership and creating amazing teams. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. You can find me at drjenniferedwards.com. That's Dr. with a DR. LinkedIn at Dr. Jennifer Edwards. And you can also just email me, good old-fashioned email, jennifer@drjenniferedwards.com. So thank you again, Aaron, for such an important topic. And we'll see you all next time.
All right. Thanks for listening.